This is a program about work, a four-letter word, one that all of us experience in one form or another for a major portion of our lives. Though a simple four-letter word, work is multidimensional in its effects on both the individual and the greater culture. How it is organized and performed, and how it is shared, as well as its fruits, is what this program will attempt to touch upon through music and the spoken word.
Wake Up America. The American Economic Foundation presents the 90th broadcast of the Wake Up America Radio Forum, the court of open argument where the problems of the nation are analyzed and the voice of the people may be heard. This discussion will center around the future of free competitive enterprise in America. The speakers...
The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, a struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the earth and the machinery of production, and abolish the wage system.
Get to work!
Of life is you work 50 hours a week, both of you work 50 hours a week with food on the table. The United States, under the Reagan years, ended up with the highest working hours in the world, lowest wages in the industrial world. And you're not only supposed to spend all your time working, you're supposed to spend the rest of your time consuming. That means you've got to be maxed out on 5 credit cards. So you're totally under control. There's nothing you can do except try to, get by the next day and get more goods that you don't want. And the parent-child relationships have declined significantly, even in time spent, because people just don't have time. They're too busy either working or consuming. Teenage kids, their conception of what you do when you're off time is wander through the mall and look at things things that are so expensive you can't even imagine buying them, and no sane person would want them in the first place. But that's driven into your head from infancy, and alongside of it is the indoctrination that comes from the institutions responsible for the indoctrination of the young, the schools, the churches, and so on and so forth.
There are two theories as to why people fall into debt. One of them says that many people are deprived of adequate income and are subjected to heartless taxes. Being unable to make enough money or keep enough of what they earn, they're forced to borrow on their future labor in the hope that things will get better. As their debt obligation accumulates and more of their income goes into interest payments, they have even less for their own needs and they have to be forced to borrow still more. And caught in this deepening cycle of debt, they're forced to sell their small holdings, their land eventually, and sometimes even themselves or their children into servitude. By the way, Caesar abolished that. Humans could not be reduced to property and could not be sold into servitude because of debt. He laid the groundwork for modern bankruptcy laws. The debt cycle continues to this day, as you know. Whole nations are caught in the debt trap, selling off the land and labor of future generations to international investors at most unfavorable terms.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Everything is commercialized.
Free markets, what does that mean?
We annihilate our enemies.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Con the serfs back into serfdom.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Corporate welfare.
Free markets, what does that mean?
In other words, the formula that has enable them to a certain extent to The formula they're relying on won't...
Free markets, what does that mean?
Corporate money.
We had, to date, never seen such cheating.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Money for power, power for money.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Cops and robbers, this is about the abuse of power.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Debt, 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 debt. $2 to $5 trillion deficit.
The second theory of debt says that people incur debts because they're irresponsible spendthrifts who try to live off thrifty creditors. In this scenario, In this scenario, the roles of victim and victimizer are reversed. The creditor is seen as the victim, and the debtor is seen as the victimizer. And this model, though, I think does explain the behavior of some people. The only thing wrong is that it's applied to the wrong social group, to the poor. In fact, there are some profligate few, la jeunesse dorée, the gilded youth, who come from socially esteemed backgrounds, who live in a grand style, and they have, through history, cultivated the magic art of borrowing forever while paying back never. Such limitless credit, such big credit, though, is more likely to be extended not to the poor farmer or laborer, but to those of gilded heritage.
America's more affordable than ever. Just $19. Now you can get the all-new powerful, strong, sexy, affordable, great, easy, new extreme. Simple, unrivaled, effective, special, no money down today.
Drain the people, drain them dry. Drain the people, hear them cry. Drain the people, drain them dry, yai, yai. Drain the people, watch them die, yai, yai.
Some labor history. We're frequently being warned about this or that alien menace, about foreigners or terrorists who might attack our shores. But the perceived threat does not always come from abroad. Throughout much of the 19th century and early 20th century, the business-owned press stoked an anti-radical hysteria among the general public by targeting what they called the dangerous classes within the United States itself. The dangerous classes were, specifically, the poor, the immigrants, the underemployed, and anyone who organized for a decent-paying job and better work conditions. Labor agitation was stigmatized as a threat to the American way of life. True Americanism was equated with an uncritical acceptance of the corporate business system. Industrialists joined with publishers in branding labor activists as communist, anarchist, and un-American. Posters and pictures were circulated showing Uncle Sam guiding American workers away from the swarthy agitators. The term un-American first came into significant usage at the turn of that century as a political epithet during this period when true Americans used it against striking immigrant workers and later against any militant opponents of the economic order, immigrant or native-born. In 1886, during a time of substantial labor unrest, Theodore Roosevelt, himself a rich employer, talked of setting worker against worker in the name of patriotism. Quote, I'm quoting Teddy Roosevelt now, "My men are hard-working, laboring men who work longer hours for no greater wages than most of the strikers. But they are Americans through and through. I believe nothing would give them greater pleasure than the chance with rifles at one of the mobs." So here we had Teddy Roosevelt almost inciting his own workers and glorifying and praising them for their supposed willingness to kill fellow workers. To dilute the labor militancy of its employees, the Ford Motor Company sponsored Americanization programs for them. Patriotism was equated with labor discipline and compliant worker attitudes. Other business firms fashioned programs modeled after Ford's.
Now, some people have too much money. They wear it like a pair of pants. They say there's room for everybody, but you never get a chance. You can't ride that elevator. You can't climb those stairs. Because those people have too much money up there. Now, some people have too much money. and they drive it around like a car. They never pick up hitchhikers unless they know who they are. They all belong to the same club and they all wear those rings. Those people have too much money, that's the thing. Too much money puts somebody under the bridge. You know it's like water. You scoop it up, the level goes down. And too much money can choke a gift horse. All you want is a drink, but you fall in and drown. You know that French lady meant well when she said they ought to just go eat cake crumbs. She had no idea where poverty came from. Silver spoons and glass slippers, you know, their minds are just a mess. Those people have too much money, I guess. Now, some people have too much money, and I think it's time to make a change. Get some checks and balances going in the game. Get a minimum wage and a maximum wage, too, and let the chips fall. Because those people have too much money, that's all. That's right. Some people have too much money, that's all.
We've gotten used to thinking about the last quarter century as a replay of the Gilded Age. So here we are in Gilded Age 2, waiting for the next progressive era. That is, we're facing a kind of a movie being run in reverse, the dismantling of the reforms that began in the progressive era and came to fruition in the New Deal and were extended even under Dwight Eisenhower and were expanded in the 1960s, Medicare and Medicaid. So since Reagan came to power, we've been looking at the dismantling of this huge network of social services and government solutions to social problems. In an era of neoliberalism, in other words, we're looking back to the late 19th century era of laissez-faire liberalism, and we seem to be living history, we seem to be violating the rule that history doesn't repeat itself. And yet, the changes that we face today in the nature of the world economy are important to note. Although the capitalism was internationalized at the beginning of the 20th century, it was not globalized the way it is today. The capitalism of that era was industrially driven. Today, it's driven by consumption. The biggest corporation then was United States Steel Corporation. Today, it's Walmart, a $250 billion operation.
Business, business everywhere runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this place really burst. Business, business everywhere. Babies use the word before they learn to walk the stairs. Anybody here say World Trade Organization? Perpetuating, exploiting peoples, tribes, and nations. Let's see if we can see how far back bad business started. Long before the pharaohs and the day the sea was parted. When Moses led the slaves through the waves to be saved. But tell me, did things really change? Look around the world, the top to down, it's getting awful strange. Bad business getting poor people in a tizziness. Makes them want to blow up Babylon so high it's dizziness. Business at the center of the WTO. World Trade, what O-W-T-C center? You know.
know, a disaster. Business making pollution grow faster. Made a crook of the doctor and the pastor. Took the president and made of him a bastard. And sells to you the rip-off rapper on your ghetto blaster. Who wants money first and justice second? I'm wrecking this. Throw the merchants out the church, they're begging for a king-size downfall. Beggars in the street because of y'all. Let it be known that dirty business made the world trade fall. Not terrorism, but businessism itself. Like the media putting war flicks on your shelf. A lot of wealth in your daily news and TV too. Papers, capers, congressmen are just escapers, it's true. Yeah, while the refugees go do 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 do. Business, business everywhere earns the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth determined its godly worth? Time to put it in the hearth before this place really bursts.
You'll never win the lottery. On the other hand, the chances are pretty good that you'll slave away at some miserable job the rest of your life. That's because you were in all likelihood born into the wrong social class. Let's face it, you're a member of the working caste. Sorry. As a result, you don't have the education, upbringing, connections, manners, appearance, and good taste to ever become one of us. In fact, you'd probably need a book the size of the Yellow Pages to list all the unfair advantages we have over you. That's why we're so relieved to know that you still continue to believe all those silly fairy tales about justice and equal opportunity in America. Of course, in a hierarchical social system like ours, there's never been much room at the top to begin with. Besides, it's already occupied by us. And we like it up here so much that we intend to keep it that way. But at least there's usually someone lower in the social hierarchy you can feel superior to and kick in the teeth once in a while. Even a lonely dishwasher can easily find some poor slob further down in the pecking order to sneer and spit at. So be thankful for migrant workers, prostitutes, and homeless street people. Always remember that if everyone like you were economically secure and socially privileged like us, there would be no one left to fill all those boring, dangerous, low-paid jobs in our economy, and no one to fight our wars for us or blindly follow orders in our totalitarian corporate institutions, and certainly no one to meekly go to their grave without having lived a full and creative life. So please, keep up the good work. You also probably don't have the same greedy, compulsive drive to possess wealth, power, and prestige that we have, and even though you may sincerely want to change the way you live, you're also afraid of the very change you desire, thus keeping you and others like you in a nervous state of limbo. So you go through life mechanically, playing your assigned social role, terrified what others would think should you ever dare to break out of the mold. Naturally, we try to play you off against each other whenever it suits our purposes. High-waged workers against low-waged, unionized against non-unionized, black against white, male against female, American workers against Japanese, against Mexican, against... We continually push your wages down by invoking foreign competition, the law of supply and demand, national security, or the bloated federal deficit. We throw you on the unemployed scrap heap if you step out of line or jeopardize our profits, and to give you an occasional break from the monotony of our daily economic blackmail, we allow you to participate in our staged, managed electoral shell games, better known to you ordinary folks as elections. Happily, you haven't a clue as to what's really happening. Instead, you blame aliens, tree-hugging environmental wackos, niggers, Jew bastards, feminazis, faggots, welfare queens, and countless others for your troubled situation. We're also very pleased that many of you still embrace the work ethic, even though most jobs in our economy degrade the environment, undermine your physical and emotional health, and basically suck your one and only life right out of you. We obviously don't know much about work, but we're sure glad you do. Of course, life could be different. Society could be intelligently organized to meet the real needs of the general population. You and others like you could collectively fight to free yourselves from our domination. But you don't know that. In fact, you can't even imagine that another way of life is possible. And that's probably the greatest, most significant achievement of our system. Robbing you of your imagination, your creativity, your ability to think and act for yourself. So, we'd truly like to thank you from the bottom of our heartless hearts. Your loyal sacrifice makes possible our corrupt luxury. Your work makes our system work. Thanks so much for knowing your place without even knowing it.
The ruling class consists largely of the politically active members of the owning class, plus new and faithful recruits from below, such as Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, Bill Clinton. All of them came from very modest backgrounds, Lyndon Johnson, but they ended up being millionaires. Helping and serving the rich usually ends up with you yourself being rich. From the beginning of the Republic to modern times, the top leadership positions, including the presidency, vice presidency, the president's cabinet, and the Supreme Court, have rested predominantly in the hands of white males from wealthy families, with most of the remainder being of upper middle class origin, that is, moderately successful business people, commercial farmers, and professionals. Legend has it that many U.S. presidents rose from humble origins. In fact, almost all came from families of a higher socioeconomic status than about 90% of the U.S. population.
Maybe I can put this differently. The new world order's gonna get hurt just by being me. Cause I ain't seen nothing but hype, no controversy. And so it looks like this time it might have to be me. So, yeah, confidentially, it's my personal business how the rockstar gets fame. Exploiting poor folks to get rich, so tell me who's to blame. Shame on you, you poser, wake up, party's over. Kill the Land Rover, army buggy, sold the world over. Yeah, the world is soon to be over. The way this here deal's going down, that's why it's my personal business how the Bush and Cheney families been doing business with the Hussein families and getting fights when things don't go quite right, you see, and whip up wars when they need profits for the military. The chickens already came home to roost, the cat is out the bag with tea shopping on the truth. But even if the dirty businessmen get their wars, the truth's been told and will be known and grown forevermore. So if anybody doubts, look how Nero's remembered. Every lie finally leads to time and God surrenders. Yeah, while the refugees go do 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 do. Business, business everywhere runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this whole wide world bursts.
Who owns America? Contrary to a widely accepted view, this country's wealth doesn't belong to a broad middle class. The richest 1% own 60% of all corporate stock and all business assets. They own close to 90% of all tax-free bonds. True, some 40% of families own some stocks or bonds, but almost all of these have total holdings of less than $2,000. Taking into account their debts and mortgages, 90% of American families have little or no net assets. The greatest source of individual wealth is inheritance. If you're not rich, it's probably because you lack the foresight to pick the right parents at birth. Studies show that rags to riches is a rare exception. It happens sometimes, but most people, the overwhelming majority, die in the class to which they were born. A large majority of the self-made Forbes 400 super rich inherited their fortunes, or they received crucial startup capital from a family member. The trend has been toward greater economic inequality. Corporate profits have more than doubled in the last decade. Income from investments has grown 2 to 3 times faster than income from work. The 500 largest U.S. industrial corporations more than doubled their assets in the last 15 years, while shedding over 5 million jobs. And the years that follow brought the highest level of corporate profitability in the post-war era, and probably the highest level of profitability in human history. During the last 3 decades, the richest 1% in this country saw their average after-tax incomes increase by 115%, while the incomes of the poorest fifth declined by almost 10%. U.S. Census Bureau income studies refer to the richest 20% who earned 13 times more than the poorest 20%. But being in the top 20% doesn't make you rich. All you have to do is earn $65,000 or more. It's really upper middle class, if that. The top 20% are not the rich. The very richest stratum consists of not more than a tiny fraction of 1% of the population. That 1% controls most of the wealth, and that 1% is not 13 times richer than the poorest people, not 30 times richer, but really 1,000 times or more richer than the poorest 20%. Few of the people who study income distribution seem to realize how rich the rich really are, and that's because the U.S. Census Bureau doesn't sample incomes over $1 million. Income and wealth differences are greater than at any time over the previous 60 years. As one economist put it, if we made an income pyramid out of children's play blocks, with each block representing $1,000 of income, most of us would not go more than a yard or so off the ground. But the peak for the super rich would be a tower of blocks that's many times higher than the Eiffel Tower itself.
I was fascinated by the assumption that a woman could get a job and then be lifted out of poverty just by virtue of having a job and be able to support her children and everything would be fine. Actually, it gets worse than that. I don't know if you know the Bush administration's other big emphasis for women on welfare, their big solution for poverty among women, is that women, low-income women, should get married. Anybody here ever been married? Yeah. I mean, any women been married? I mean, it doesn't really work that way. One of the things they don't understand, and there's so many things, like not all women are heterosexual, but we'll leave that aside, is that most women who are poor are likely to marry men of their own class. And in the United States, working class men, blue collar men, have really seen their wages fall drastically in the last two decades. So I once sat down to calculate how many men a woman has to marry to lift her out of poverty. And it is a number greater than two, which is strangely enough illegal.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can. Do you know how many people wanna work in this old land? Well, I woke up singing America, 'cause that song still rings true. Now I'm supposed to do anything that they want me to do. Well, I used to work real hard till my job left my backyard. I finally got my life together, trying to make it better.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can. Do you know how many people wanna work in other lands?
I sang America back in school. Now I don't know what to do.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can.
Find me at the tavern or at home smoking weed. I'll just wait for the rest of the world to get everything they need.
Take that job and love it. Better take it while you can. Do you know?
I'd like to apply for a job. Yes, the job you have available. My manner is most saleable, and I hope you'll find me suitable for $5.15 an hour. I really have the skills, you see. I've been to university, and though I studied history, I found my heart to truly be in men's ties and socks, glass figurines, the discount shoe industry. What makes me think I'd be good for this job? Well, I love working with people. And I love riding the subway an hour and a half each way. Let's add those hours to my day, and I'll be making a whopping $3.75 an hour. No, sir, I do want the job. Can't you tell by my suit? No, actually, I don't own a dress. I don't feel comfortable, I confess. But hell, for $5.15 an hour, I'll endeavor to wear some colors other than black. I enjoy working with the public, and I'm good with money. Oh, yes, you're right. All us girls are good with money. Yes, that's charming. Yes, how funny. I like a good work atmosphere where the boss says whatever he wants and the rest of us just listen. I'm a very fast learner, and I promise that if you give me this job, I'll be the perfect subhuman and never let my contempt shine in my worshipping eyes. What could you bring? I love working with people, and let's see, what else was I going to tell you? No, I don't expect vacation pay, and yes, I'm available every day, and though I don't like the evil way you're looking at me, I've got rent to pay.
Sorry.
And yes, I can start on Saturday.
Maybe we're looking for someone with lots of experience and good manners.
What I did not do so well at was making ends meet with the wages I earned. In these jobs, I averaged $7 an hour. I don't know what that trans. I don't know what the current exchange rate is, but £4.
4 or 5 pounds. No.
4 or 5 pounds, which is about the minimum wage in this country. Yeah, that is well above the U.S. minimum wage. The U.S. nationwide minimum wage is $5.15. So I was above the minimum. In fact, at $7 an hour as one person, I did not even qualify as poor by the U.S. federal definition of poverty. I wasn't poor. I was fine, according to the government. But I could not really make ends meet, although in many cases I had more than one job at a time. You know, I would sometimes two jobs in the same day, very, very difficult with physically demanding jobs, sometimes just jobs working 7 days a week. And what completely undid me was housing costs. If I had had children with me, it would have probably been child care costs, too, that undid me.
It was the people, it was the American people, it was the working people in this country who fought and fought for the 8-hour day. Who fought for public education, who fought for public health services. It was the people who fought for decent housing and a decent standard of living, who fought for a minimum wage, who fought against discrimination. Name one great leader, name one great political leader, name one great great intellectual who fought and did those things. No, those people, they jumped on the bandwagon after the people fought. And it was the plutocrats, it was the capitalists, it was the economic royalists who fought against every one of those things. They fought against giving you a decent wage. They're still fighting against that. They're still fighting for wage cuts. They fought against Social Security. They fought against occupational safety. They're still fighting against it. They fought against environmental protections. They still are fighting against it, undermining it every way they can because they're afraid they're going to lose out on a dollar. Because every dollar they've got to give to you, every dollar they've got to spend on stupid things like public safety and wages and occupational safety and consumer product safety, every dollar wasted on stupid things like that, which the free market would take care of, every dollar spent on that is one less dollar for their insatiable greed. And that's it. So don't credit the capitalists for giving you whatever modicum of prosperity you have. We got it despite it. We tore it out of their teeth and out of their greedy claws. And we still got to hold on to it, and they're trying to get it back from us.
Every job was hard. For example, at Walmart, my job was in ladies' wear. Now, that sounded really genteel to me. I thought I would be giving fashion advice to the women of Minnesota. But no, what I was doing was returning clothing that had somehow gotten to the floor or been secreted in some wrong spot by customers or had been tried on, putting it in its exactly right place, which meant memorizing the locations of hundreds of items, which would then be rotated every few days to convince me I had Alzheimer's. But so that was took my entire concentration. Similarly, waitressing. I mean, waitresses invented multitasking. That is, you know, there is no moment in which your mind is free for something else. So that was one important lesson for me from all this. No job is unskilled. Every job takes skill and intelligence and certainly a lot of concentration.
A thousand acres becoming clear. Cut down the forest, the big ones here. Cover the ground with a massive tire. Make sure there's room for every car. One floor, half mile, massive sprawl. One floor, wonder, super mall. It's spreading out far and wide, taking over the countryside. Say goodbye to your forests, they're going down. Chinese prisoners will sweat and bleed, and you'll get all the stuff you need. Walton's children, profits reap, buying low and selling cheap. What happens to mom and pop? Turn the key and close the shop. Say goodbye to your city, it's going down. Store, see the diner shut its door. No more neighbors you can meet, more ghosts and people on the street. No more jobs with living pay. Sam Walton took it all away. Beneath the lights, the work you bear, the lucky ones can get on welfare. Forget your children's cap and gown. It's all just Walmart overtime, but you can work all you want, night and day, as long as you can stand the pay. Just don't get sick or have a kid. You'll end up like the last one did, on the street and unemployed, in a town that's been destroyed, where miserable has become a noun. Walmart is coming to town, bringing the whole country down. Walmart is coming, Walmart is coming, Walmart is coming to town.
You know, there's an enormous industry in this nation that is churning out day after day, at the cost of billions of dollars, the sensation, entirely erroneous, in the body politic that everything is okay and everything's going to keep on being just the way it is now on into the indefinite future. And to continue to produce the impression which creates the best reception of this falsehood is a tremendous drain on human energy and resources.
One, two, three, four. Coal fires burning, deforestation, cookie cutter houses, no reparation. Cars, cars everywhere, highways, asphalt, pop cans, strip mining, extracting cobalt. Industrial civilization is a pyramid scheme. Industrial civilization is a pyramid scheme. Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Pasture pigeons, sea turtles, prairie dogs, dodo, red wolf, black bear, bald eagle, buffalo, no habitat extinction, bison, salmon. Millions of species are gone, gone, gone. Industrial civilization.
civilization is a pyramid scheme.
Industrial civilization is a pyramid scheme.
Just waiting for the benefits to be seen. Rich folks like stealing all the resources. Poor and global south are feeling it the worst. Promises, promises, we'll get our share. The planet we live on gets stripped bare.
Industrial civilization is a pyramid scheme.
Industrial civilization is a pyramid scheme.
Just waiting for the benefits to be seen.
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 Creating the poor. Many compassionate people castigate the very rich and powerful for their lack of concern for the poor. But I've come to the conclusion that the very rich are anything but indifferent to the poor. They are quite mindful of keeping the poor in their place, of having them work as hard as possible for as little as possible. The very rich have a real concern that the working poor do not become too elevated in their collective class condition. Indeed, the owning class sees such a development as threatening to its own vital interests. Throughout the ages, the rich have argued that the poor are the authors of their own poverty. In 17th century England, impoverished people were thought to be the victims of their own, quote, idle, irregular, and wicked courses. Little has changed since then. In 1995, Republican leader Newt Gingrich reduced poverty to a matter of personal inclination, quote, I am prepared to say to the poor, you have to learn new habits. The habits of being poor don't work, unquote. Meanwhile, Gingrich tirelessly pursued policies to enlarge the ranks of the poor, just as our Republican leadership in the White House and Congress do today. They fight to shift still more of the tax burden onto low and middle-income people. They fight to eliminate the minimum wage, to cut spending for public housing, and to abolish school lunches, food stamps, and aid to families with dependent children. They support enormous tax cuts for the corporate rich. They do everything they can to deregulate business activities, downgrade jobs, downsize workforces, and break labor unions. All policies that have led to both deeper and more widespread poverty and greater accumulations of wealth for the super rich. For affluent people, the poor are less than human, demoralized creatures who seem to prefer squalor and misery, freeloaders who live off the rest of us. When they do work, they want to be paid too much for too little effort, according to the super rich. And when they organize into unions, they become troublesome barriers to productivity and prosperity. All this we hear again and again. And yet, you'll find that there's no real mass support in the general American public for the mean-spirited cuts that have been imposed by a Republican Congress and White House. One survey found that 80% of the public felt that society and government had a moral obligation to alleviate poverty. About the same number reject the right-wing argument that poverty is to be blamed on the poor themselves, rather than on the material economic conditions that beset the poor. But thanks to conservative disinformationists who claim that 90% of government anti-poverty funds fail to reach the poor, the public thought the programs were administered with much waste. In fact, the exact opposite is true. Only about 10% of poverty funds are spent on administrative costs, with the rest going to recipients. Another bit of conservative disinformation frequently mouthed by right-wing members of Congress and media commentators is that $5.3 trillion has been spent on welfare in the past 30 years. This bit of fiction is seldom challenged. In fact, the actual figure is less than a tenth of that, about $400 billion in 30 years. $400 billion, what the Pentagon spends in a year. In contrast to right-wing Republicans, those of more liberal persuasion see poverty as a problem created by hard times, substandard schools and housing, deteriorating neighborhoods, a lack of much-needed public programs. If people are poor, it's not because they're lazy and irresponsible. 70% of the families that live in poverty have someone, at least one person, working full-time. If they're poor, it's because they're being paid poverty wages and they have to pay high prices for things and are burdened with all sorts of regressive taxes. Poverty, then, is a product of the accumulation of wealth. The wealthy need the poor. The wealthy live off the backs of the poor.
I spent my whole life making somebody rich. I busted my ass for that son of a bitch. And he left me to die like a dog in a ditch. And he told me I'm all used up. He used up my labor, he used up my time. He plundered my body and squandered my mind. And gave me a pension of handouts and wine. And told me I'm all used up. My kids are in hock to a godjic hole work, slaving their lives out for some other jerk. Yeah, my youngest in Frisco just made shipping clerk. He don't know I'm all used up. Hey, young people reaching for power and gold don't have respect for anything old. For pennies they're bought and for promises sold. Someday they'll all be used up. They use up the oil, they use up the trees, they use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up? I'll finish my life in this crummy hotel. It's lousy with bugs and my God, what a smell. But my plumbing still works and I'm clear as a bell. Don't tell me I'm all used up. Outside my window the world passes by, gives me a handout and spits in my eye. And no one can tell me, cause no one knows why. I'm living but I'm all used up. Sometimes in my dreams I sit by a tree. My life is a book of how things used to be. And kids gather around and they listen to me. And they don't think I'm all used up. And there's songs and there's laughter and things I can do. And all that I've learned I can give back to you. And I'd give my last breath just to make it come true. No, I'm not all used up. They use up the oil and they use up the trees. They use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up?
In a forest of stone underneath a corporate canopy where the sun rarely filters down, the ground is not so soft. It's not so soft. They build buildings to house people making money, or they build buildings to make money off of housing people. It's true, like a lot of things are true. I'm foraging for a phone booth on the forest floor that is not so soft. I look up, it looks like the buildings are burning, but it's just the sun setting in the windows, the solar system calling an end to another business day, eternally circling, signaling the rhythmic clicking on and off of computers, the pulse of the American machine, the pulse that draws death dancing out of anonymous side streets, you know, the ones that always get dumped on and never get plowed. It draws death dancing out of little countries with funny languages where the ground is getting harder and it was not that soft before. And those who call the shots are never in the line of fire. Why? When there's life for hire out there, if a flag of truth were raised, we could watch every liar rise to wave it. Here we learn America like a script. Playwright, birthright, same thing. We bring ourselves to the role. We're all rehearsing for the presidency. I always wanted to be commander-in-chief of my one-woman army. But I can envision the mediocrity of my finest hour. It's the failed America in me. It's the fear that lives in a forest of stone underneath a corporate canopy where the sun rarely filters down and the ground is not so soft.
We are Americans.
Drummer, plumber, soda jerk.
Strike up the band. We are Americans.
Stoker,
broker,
barber,
clerk.
United we stand. We're a voting population, a free and equal nation. Our freedom rings so often.
Freedom from want and freedom from fear.
Who fights the battles for the free?
The common man.
Preacher.
Teacher.
Engineer.
Biller.
Miller.
Financier.
Who wins the final victory?
The common man.
Common man with common sense. Our forefathers did it. Liberty's life. With blood and faith and fight.
The country is really in the hands of assholes, you know. I already know this. It's all in the hands of assholes. And I don't need to be told again and again that they're assholes. I know they're assholes. it's just obvious. So how do you deal with chronic incipient assholery? You know, how do you deal with the corporatization of the executive branch of the government? It's behaving like a corporation. And corporations are anti-democratic organizations. And that's becoming more and more pervasive. Well, you resist.
Babylon, a civilized behavioral notoriety. The more evil the empire, the more paranoid the society. Building to the new world order, we're expected to carry the stone. Emperors and the feeding class, human beings being used up fast. The miners keep on mining. Intelligence is the mother lode. Imagination as an energy source in this predator's way of dining. Defining how and what we think, as we're led to the way to believe. Conditioned reaction we call thought. Our reality guides in how we perceive. Ways of being lost and alone. Who runs from their doubt and fear? In the mask of everything's normal. Who is not feeling or seeing too clear? Being programmed. Anyway, our spirit bleeds all over our lives. Our lives become fuel for predator needs. Building to the new world order, we're expected to carry the stone. Emperor and the feeding class. Human being being used up fast. Beauties of Babylon, a civilized behavioral notoriety. The more evil the empire, the more paranoid the society.